And welcome back to the Health and Wellness Show. And that there was Honey Won't You by Applewood Road. And today we have in studio with us Fiona McDevitt. And just can you hear me there, Fiona?
Yes, very well, thank you.
Okay. And what about now?
Perfect.
Okay, great. and Fiona is a craniosacral therapist, and she's been living here. How long are you living here now, Fiona?
About three quarters of my working life. So
okay, yeah, very good, yeah. And can you do craniosacral therapy?
That's right.
Okay, what can you tell us about craniosacral therapy? What does that translate onto?
Craniosacral therapy, it's a manual therapy technique, which means we use our hands, but it's a very light touch, and we listen with our hands. We use best way to describe is probably a good intention to engage with the tissues that we're palpating through our hands, and to evaluate the system and to encourage the body to heal.
It's really interesting what you said there. I'm actually a practitioner of Rosen method as well. Do you know, have you heard of that?
I've heard of it, yes.
And we use a phrase as well called listening with your hands. And can you explain that from a craniosacral point of view, please?
Well, I'll say it from maybe two aspects. One is that the number of sensory nerve endings in our hands is the same density as the number of sensory nerve endings in the retina in the back of our eye. And that's where the densest number of them are in any place in the body. Mm-hmm. So in one sense, you could say we see with our hands, because we get a huge amount of information from that. And it's not all conscious. Yeah. So a lot of it would be other unconscious, that it doesn't make its way through the brain right up to the conscious system. And the other thing is that when we place our hands in the body, we're palpating for the craniosacral rhythm, which is the rhythm that the cerebrospinal fluid, which is creating the brain and is nourishing the brain and spinal cord and then filters through the body. We're palpating the rhythm that creates, and if it's symmetrical or not, and the quality of it, the amplitude, and the rate of it. We're also palpating the fascia, which is the soft tissue membrane. It pretty much wraps around every part of the body, every organ, every muscle, every bone, and even down to each individual cell. So therefore, it connects everything. It's a bit like a honeycomb in which all the cells sit. So if it's a little bit tight in one area, it can transmit that tension to another part of the area.
Wow,
sometimes the way I describe it to people is to imagine a tablecloth, and you've a pile of crockery on one side and none on the other, and if you close your eyes and pull, you'll feel the tighter side.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And that's the same as if there's a tension or an injury or in some part of the body, it'll feel tenser and it doesn't have the same gliding and smooth movement.
I took a course one time called Structural Integration.
Oh yeah.
And it touched on a lot of that kind of stuff actually. It was really interesting, you know. Yeah.
Well, the body works and more optimally and functions more optimally when it can move fluid-like, in a sense. Everything is very free to move. There's no tension, there's no jaggedness, there's no jarring. The joints are oiled up, in a sense. Sometimes we wish we had an equivalent of WD-40 to squirt on the joints. Yeah, would be great. But our
Energetic WD-40, is that right?
Yeah, maybe that's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
Possibly, yes.
And what does it work on? What does it heal? What kind of stuff does it treat?
Well, no matter what therapy is used, the only person that heals that body is the only person you heal is yourself.
Yes.
So any practitioner or therapist, all we're doing is facilitating a body.
Yeah. Can't blame the wife, no, or can't blame
no.
the partner.
Yeah. We all heal ourselves. Yeah. So we're just facilitating any person's body to promote its own healing, because sometimes things there's a tightness, so the blood can't flow as easily, or the lymph or something like that, so it's slowed down, or there's a structural misalignment, or there's a dysfunction somewhere in maybe one of the organs. So the body's always looking to be to balance itself and to be working as optimally as possible.
I've listened to theory as well, because we met on the circuits, let's say.
Yes.
But my own theory there, and you just said it actually in a different way, but is that any time your body is out of alignment, in be it physical, mental, or emotional, or spiritual, if you want to bring that in, it's actually your body trying to say, look, hang on, there's something happening here, and it needs to be looked at. And it's actually the body's way of trying to recorrect itself. Would you agree with that, or?
Yes, it's what we often see is the physical manifestation of a compensatory pattern.
Yes.
So the body will compensate, because overall it's always wanting to get to homeostasis, which is balance in the body. But sometimes the compensation choice it makes can have huge negative effects, because it's asking something to do a job it's not fully designed to do, or it's asking it to work too hard or for too long, and that kind of thing. And that's what causes the strain, which leads to the injury or the pain or the dysfunction. So in essence, yes, I would agree.
Okay, yeah. You're also a physical therapist. Are you physio or physical therapist?
I'm a chartered physiotherapist.
Okay. There's
a lot of it's in the media a lot at the moment, because we're going through our state regulation.
Okay,
so
that's right.
The terminology physical therapist, physiotherapist, chartered physiotherapist is going to be protected.
Right.
But it hasn't been absolutely 100% decided.
Are counsellors falling under that? Counsellors and psychotherapists are coming under that, as well, are they?
They'll be coming under state regulation, So in the long run, it will protect the title and ensure good standards of practice and that type of thing. But at the moment, we're just literally starting that process, so we're not fully registered yet.
Yeah, they've been talking about it for a long time as well, haven't they?
It's a long time.
Yeah. I think what happens is at the start of the year, the Dáil will come back after the holidays or whatever, and they'll say, yeah, look, we've got to sort this out. And then they go, yes, we do. And then after a good number of weeks, it kind of falls back down to the end of the queue again, which is, good and bad, but I think ultimately it's not really a good thing,
Well, it has been delayed multiple times. Our problem relative to a lot of the other different type of professionals, like, say, the occupational therapist or the psychotherapist and so on, is that the training for a chartered physiotherapist is a minimal degree course. Mm. The training for physical therapists is anything from a few weeks course to right up to a four-year degree. Mm-hmm. So the standard within that term is very varied. However, within the world, the term physiotherapist and physical therapist is interchangeable. So it makes a certain amount of sense to have the same here, because a lot of physios travel and so on.
Yes.
In order to have that flexibility, and the standard needs to be set. So that's the process at the moment.
Go and take a bit of music now again. And when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about how your original training of being a physiotherapist translates to being a craniosacral therapist. So,
okay.
Funnily enough. And yeah, we're back in studio here with Fiona McDevitt, who is a craniosacral therapist. And we were just chatting before there about, I suppose the benefits of it and how it works and that kind of stuff, craniosacral therapy. And so you're also, just to recap a little bit, you're also a trained physiotherapist, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Excellent. How did you get into craniosacral then? What was that?
Well, I was working for maybe 8 to 10 years in hospitals, but always did evening work in private practices. So my area of sort of main interest would be the musculoskeletal system. I understand the mechanics of it better than the chemistry of the lung pressures or something.
Mm-hmm,
And the lung gas and that kind of thing. But I just was getting to the point where I felt that I was missing a tool in my toolbox. So there was a small percentage of patients that you would get maybe 80% better, and then they would plateau for no apparent reason. And you'd have them checked, and there'd be no other underlying condition or any obvious reason whatsoever that why they wouldn't continue to heal. And then there was another element where there was particularly, say, after trauma, like a whiplash type of an accident or anything like that, there was a little emotional element. And because people come into us, we spend at least half an hour with them, it's a one-to-one. Sometimes they open up to us in different ways and they share things with us. Now, we're not trained as counsellors, so we don't in any way attempt to counsel them, but we can listen. And very often that's really all that they are looking for in one sense. But I felt I had no training or skills in that area of dealing with some of the emotional stuff that was being brought up, and also these patients that plateaued. Mm. So I went looking for something, another tool. So I tried a few different things. I tried reflexology, I tried kinesiology, I tried a couple of other things like that, but nothing quite caught me. And then I came across craniosacral therapy somewhere, started to read books on it, rang up one or two craniosacral therapists that I could find, and get them to explain it to me. I couldn't understand it at all. None of it made any sense at all. And yet there was something about it. So then I found a lady in Cork, Judith Monk, who sadly passed away last year, an excellent therapist. And we referred a few patients to her, and they did fantastically well. They got over that plateau, and they did really, really well, and they were pleased with how it went. Then I started to receive a few treatments myself. I thought if I experienced it, maybe I'd understand it. I still couldn't make head nor tail of it, but something about it intrigued me, so I went to do the course. And I asked about 50,000 questions on the first course, and apparently I asked the more questions than anyone else ever on the course, myself and other physio. Because it was just coming at the body from such a different perspective. It was fascinating, but it was a bit like, whoa, where is this coming from? So from there, I continued to do the courses and found it more and more fascinating. And what I liked about it was the whole body approach, the holistic approach, the fact that they recognise that the structure and function of the body is very interlinked, which as a physio we would see that as well. And also that you have to really in one way treat the whole body. Like if somebody even just comes in with a sprained ankle to you as a physio, ideally you check the knee and the hip and the back. Does anything else, maybe they fell or whatever, or put out a line because they've been limping and that type of thing. So just looking at one area didn't make sense to me. And with the craniosacral therapy, you're always treating the whole body. The other thing I liked about it was the gentleness of it, because there were some people, some bodies I found when you're treating them, didn't respond to the slightly heavier, let's call it, manual techniques of physiotherapy. That was another small area of people that I didn't have the tools for until I came across the craniosacral.
And are you treating on the emotional level as well?
With the craniosacral? Mm-hmm. Generally, it can come in. Not always, but it's there. It's part of it. You see, a lot of people don't realise emotions are actually molecules, mm-hmm. and they have receptors all over the body. So the best way I can describe to people is that if, say, you stub your toe while you were rushing because you were late and then you're so frustrated, sometimes those angry molecules are stuck mm-hmm. then in your toe. Mm-hmm. Because that's what you're feeling at the time. Where, you know, during any day or week, we're going to go through most of the emotions. We'd be disappointed, we'd be angry, we'd be sad, we'd be happy, we'd be excited, we'd be hungry, whatever. Yeah. It's a bit more fluid, like they attach in, that's what you're feeling, and then they detach and something else comes along and attaches in. So if something gets stuck there, then that can inhibit the functioning of that area. So the craniosacral therapy, by loosening up and allowing the body to help free up that area, can allow those molecules to be released. So in that way, an emotional release may occur.
So if that happens, there has to be, you know, from my understanding, there have to be like an element of personal development with that, really, isn't there?
Indeed, yes, you know. And awareness, and a lot of personal development comes from self-awareness, and some of that starts with the physical body awareness. There's quite a lot of people out there, because of their jobs, or where they're coming from, or even just their interest, really have very limited knowledge of their body and how it works, and possibly even including I myself was like this for a long time, very disconnected from the body, and we can live in our heads a lot.
Yeah.
Which I'm very good at.
Many of us are excellent at that.
Yes,
kind of
exactly
thing, yeah.
And there's a huge connection between the body and the brain and the mind, and even the heart particularly. It's a huge organ and has a huge number of neurons, a lot of which are the same type of neurons that are in the brain, and apparently there's more information going from the heart to the brain than the other way around.
Wow, this is fascinating,
so,
isn't it?
It is, yes. So imagine the amount of information that's going up there. So a lot of people are starting to feel, or a lot of people over years and for many generations have believed that we're really led from our hearts. But our culture and our training and the way we think in generally in the Western world at the moment is more that it's head-led, in a sense. But is often because we're more disconnected. So a lot of us, including myself, have
I could get into a huge argument about that now. I feel like, you know, that I suppose, or look, you know, there's the left and the right brains, right, for example, and the right brain is more connected to the heart.
You
know, I don't have my notes with me, but, you know, there's proof of it, right? And you know, and society is very left brain driven, you know, which is very mental driven and stuff like that. And we're not thinking with our bellies, we're not thinking with our hearts a lot of the time, you know. And you know, social media and advertising and all the rest of it is kind of designed to attack your kind of your left brain and kind of make you feel like that the other side isn't as important as the left brain, you know. And I think that can cause people to second guess themselves, which was going to have a huge knock-on effect on, you know, the body as well, and how people feel about themselves, you know.
I agree, yes, basically. And some people describe that we have our first mind is our gut, second is the heart, and the third is the brain or mind up there.
That's right, yeah.
And if you think of it, you know, any experience, when you first meet someone, and very sometimes you'll actually feel it in your gut.
Yeah.
Then you'll have some degree of heart connection or not, and then it'll come into the brain.
Yeah.
And yes, we tend to override the gut and the heart a lot because of the culture and the way we're trained.
I like to think of myself as a bit, you know, because I'm a therapist like yourself, and I like to think of myself as a little bit intuitive and stuff. But every time, not a day goes by where I go, damn it, I knew it at the time. Why didn't I act the other way, as opposed to the way I decided to act? That's pure, like...
Well, it's partly habit as well.
Exactly, that's just
a habit. Is a well, sort of well set, like, neural pathway, essentially. It's very familiar.
Yeah.
It's the big pathways, like the motorway. Oh, we've been up and down here so often, let's go there. So it's easier to go that way. To take the newer path is, we have to, it's almost like get out with the machete and create that path. It takes a while for that to become more...
A common...
Easier for us.
Phrase in you know, holistic health circles is we need to unlearn. We need to unlearn what we know or what we think we know, and it's kind of from unlearning, basically kind of coming out of the intellect and back into the heart a bit more. That's when we kind of really, you know, settle into ourselves and kind of learn how to, I suppose, you know, think with our belly and think with our heart, and then the intellect, you know.
Yeah, perhaps I may suggest that because we all, including myself, use the word think a lot, but perhaps we should use the word feel. And
yeah, correct. Exactly,
and to help ourselves to connect better and to hear that. And I'm not mad on the term unlearn, because I feel knowledge is always helpful and important. Mm-hmm. And however, it's almost like an expansion of learning. It's like opening up channels of receiving information that are always there, always have been, but we've just closed them or stopped listening to them.
There's actually a module that in from Body Talk System. I wasn't going to bring up Body Talk, because, you know, but
that's fine.
It's my cranial sacred here today. But you know, in Body Talk System, there's a fantastic module, and it's taught by the founder, actually, John Veltheim, and it's called The Three Brains.
Okay.
And it's about getting the connection between the gut brain, heart brain, and the brain synchronized. And what the aim is of getting those synchronized is that people actually start to follow their purpose a bit more. Because as we mentioned earlier, one part of the brain, one of the brains tends to be overridden by other parts, right? In most people, that's going to vary from person to person, but having one dictate it kind of throws people off a little bit, their kind of plan and their path and all the rest of it. But by realigning those three centers, people just get more aligned with themselves, you know, which makes sense. I mean, they come right down the middle of the body, you know.
Well, it's more balanced.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're, again, it comes back to the body. If it doesn't have to be doing huge compensation, if it's reasonably balanced, then all the functions will improve,
yes,
including our ability to amalgamate the information from our three brains.
And
to have a more balanced outcome then from that, rather than a very biased one towards one of them.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, I mean, and if you think about where on the body they're said to be, well, then, you know, you're going to have improved digestion, I guess, if you know, you're going to have improved heart, improved emotions and circulation, I would guess.
Yeah.
And surely the intellect is probably firing on a few more cylinders as well, if this is the case, you know.
Yeah, and if I may bring in the craniosacral therapy, because part of what it facilitates the body to do is to increase the fluid flow, in areas where it's a bit restricted or stagnant or slower, that helps the filtering system and it flushes out the waste products of metabolism and of inflammation and keeps it fresher and cleaner, and therefore the neuronal connections in your brain are cleaner and clearer then. So
you're not as stuck on the past, is what I would say. Then you're not stuck on the old story. The old story's been filtered out constantly.
Yeah. The story is extremely important, but it's not the whole part of it well.
No.
And you're sure, a lot of us get stuck a bit in our own stories, because again, it's the familiar, and we're all more comfortable with the familiar than with the unfamiliar.
Fiona, this is absolutely fantastic, really fascinating, I'm really enjoying it. But I'm going to play a bit of music now as well.
Sure.
And we're back in studio here with craniosacral therapist and physiotherapist, Fiona McDevitt. And we were just chatting earlier about how the heart and the brain and the mind, I suppose, connect, really, you know. And so that kind of brings me on really to looking at other modalities that people are quite familiar with these days, you know, that are, you know, growing really in popularity. You know, like, you know, Reiki, I suppose, and, you know, shamanism and all that kind of stuff. So is there a correlation between cranial sacral and those types of therapies? Would you see?
There's, I think in any therapy, all therapies, is some correlations, because generally the intention is to facilitate another person in their healing. Mm. For instance, the Reiki is purely an energy therapy. Mm. So my understanding is that the Reiki therapist tries to draw some energies possibly out of a person's body, or encourage other energies in to help the rebalancing of it and so on. And generally it's also, I think, hands off, maybe hands near the body, but not always touching. In craniosacral therapy, the hands are on the body, very, very gentle touch, equivalent to like a butterfly or a, you know, palpating a, holding a 20 cent coin, something like that, pretty mm-hmm. light. And you're also feeling the changes in the tissue, so you get a physical change or physiological change in the body, and in sometimes in the anatomy, because if something loosens out, it can help the realignment structurally and so on.
I can vouch for this. I've met Fiona before. Yeah,
you've had the experience on the table. And craniosacral therapy, obviously, people are lying down with their clothes on. Mm. You put a blanket over, they make them very comfortable. Same with Reiki. You know, it's not like physio. Often you'd have to, if they treat, say, the knee or the ankle, you might get them on shorts, so you can actually see and palpate directly onto the skin, that type of thing. So there are some correlations, and there are some differences. Being a physiotherapist, what I like about the craniosacral therapy is that it's so based in the anatomy and physiology, and you can feel the changes in the tissue, because as a physio we have our hands on the bodies, because our gifts are in our hands, our tools are in our hands, which is such an amazing gift, really, that we can, through different techniques, help the body to heal and to release tight joints or stiff joints and tightened up muscles or restricted muscles, all of that type of thing, and encourage the healing in different ways. So I can, when I have my hands in the body for craniosacral therapy, I can also feel and palpate, even though it's a really light touch, much deeper into the body, so you can palpate into the organs, because you're palpating through that fascia, which remembers that continuous membrane that wraps around everything. So by putting feeling a very gentle intention of a little pressure here and there to see, does it move, does it not, where is it tight, and then working in that area to release that. So yeah, there are definitely some correlations, but it's a wide spectrum.
And like, you know, do you find that the type of person who trains in craniosacral therapy, are they a little bit open-minded, or you know, I don't want to sound, what's the word I'm trying to, and I'm trying not to fill dead air now as well, I'm trying to think of the word.
You're trying to be PC, or
yeah, I'm trying to be PC, like, you know, I mean, like, are people who train in craniosacral, are they typically more open-minded than someone who wouldn't, you know, be...
Depends where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Well, in general, I suppose they are. You know, if you're coming from a more conventional medical background, then you'd suspect that they're a little more open-minded in order to even consider it.
Yeah.
If they're coming from something even more unconventional, let's call it, then they're possibly... Yeah, I suspect that most people are open-minded.
I know what you're saying. if you are some, let's say, who is into, like, say, shamanism, right, you want to become a craniosacral therapist, you're probably kind of coming down a couple of notches, really, and kind of grounding yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And
whereas if you were like a doctor or GP, no offense to the medical students listening or anything like that, you might be dealt, you know, kind of opening up to something that you weren't maybe open to before.
Yeah, and again, it really comes back to that the more information we have, and the more channels we can open to receive different information in different ways, then the more information we have. And generally, the more information we have on all levels, we tend to make slightly better decisions and so on, be it in a treatment scenario or just in life in general. So I think open mind is probably not... It's a difficult one to say yes or no.
Yeah, I understand.
It's maybe where craniosacral therapy fits in the spectrum of health professionals. So you have the more conventional end, which is the doctors and the nurses and so on, and then you have the further end. The
look, when I have tonsillitis, no, Fiona, I won't be ringing you. I'll be ringing my GP. You know, I'm the world's worst patient. You know, I'm like, sort me out now. You know, but like on that note, you know, I assume with craniosacral you can treat things, but also, like, is it fair to say you can maintain your health through getting, you know, regular sessions of greener circles?
Oh, absolutely. Again, it's a whole body treatment, and we evaluate the whole body as well as encourage the treatment of it. And our aim and intention is to facilitate the body to be optimally functioning, and being as free and loose and mobile as possible, so as well oiled in a sense, so the joints and the movements, but all our organs need to be moved as well and not be stiff. And people may have had lots of falls or injuries, or they may have had surgeries or all sorts of different things, and other things as well can influence, you know, holding patterns where we maybe the way we walk or move is similar to how our parents or grandparents did. We can inherit things through our DNA, not just our hair colour and eye colour.
I know that.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So, you know, we can... Yes, it really does facilitate the whole body. And the more we have it regularly, we're keeping everything moving better. And like, as a physio, I believe that as well. We're designed for movement as the body. It's a fantastically, brilliantly engineered, designed unit, the body.
Yeah.
And the better functioning we can keep it, yes, the better, the healthier it'll be, for sure. So it is a very good way of maintaining the body and the body's health.
And funny enough, I was chatting to someone in recently, and they were saying like that, you know, they were feeling a bit stressed from work and college was on top of them, and they said they were going to go off for a craniosacral session. So would you often get people who are maybe going through a little bit of difficult time and they're going for purely for that purpose, do you know?
Yes, we do, and in craniosacral therapy, we through the fascia, we can access the nervous system. So you have the central nervous system, which is the messages going down to the muscles and glands and so on, and the sensory information coming back. And then you have the autonomic nervous system, and that comprises the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. So sympathetic is based the state of being we're in, such as fight, flight, or freeze, or which is really overwhelm. And that's a bit like most of us who are running around like headless chickens all day. We're kind of up in sympathetic. And then the opposite end is the parasympathetic, which is really more rest and digest. And the important thing about parasympathetic is that that's the state in which the body can do its own healing and repair work.
So you're not necessarily like delving into anyone's past, or you're not healing it, like let's say a traumatic memory. You're just allowing the body to do that.
Yeah, our intention isn't necessarily to do that, because it's not exactly within our scope of practice. We're not there to diagnose.
It's none of your business.
We're not, in one sense. Yeah, sometimes patients will tell you things, and that's perfectly, that's their choice. But we work with the sensations in the body.
Yeah.
So, for instance, if somebody comes in and they're anxious and nervous, a frequent symptom that they would feel is a tightness in their chest, and maybe more difficulty breathing at times. So we would work with that sensation, and we would encourage the body into the parasympathetic state, which is the state in which it can do its healing. And to do that, we encourage the person to feel that they're in a safe place.
Yeah.
So if the therapist is neutral and grounded and calm themselves, and the room is quiet and comfortable and warm, and if the therapist's intention is clear and clean to be there just to support and hold the space for that person in that session of the craniosacral therapy. That's really how we would approach it. So
it's actually incredibly simple, really, isn't it? Like at the end, you're kind of treating a broad scope of things, you know, be it mental, physical, emotional, you know, primarily physical, right? Or let's say freeing up the emotional holdings, but at the end of the day, I understand from speaking to you like that you're very knowledgeable of all of it, you know, but like I think when the space is allowed for someone to heal, it can be actually quite simple.
Absolutely, yes. And it's so simple that I trained with Upledger. Worse than any, but that's just the way I went. They have a book and a little program where they encourage children to treat each other or treat their parents, or they can teach parents a couple of very simple techniques, so that if they maybe have a very disabled child or that needs a lot of work, or maybe an autistic child, they can teach them a couple of techniques that can help to calm that person's nervous system and to help the person to in their healing in a very regular way. So they don't necessarily need to know all of the anatomy and physiology and all of that behind it, but it's that simple, it's the intention.
And kids very often don't know what they don't know as well, like, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, and they just kind of off they go, and you know, I'm just healing something there.
And they don't, they're more open, really. I think a lot of times, like you say, we unlearn. I think kids probably in the first few years of life know more than we do. We sort of forget it or push it out or lose it or unlearn it, and then we have to spend the rest of the life learning it again.
you know?
But the other end of that is that as a therapist, I would feel it's important to have a reasonably good knowledge of the anatomy and physiology.
Of course. Yeah.
And partly to understand and to recognise the red flags or the important things that are beyond our scope practice, in a sense, or beyond our skills. Perhaps it could be someone who's borderline having mental health issues, so that they need much more qualified support.
Yes,
they might come to you with anxiety, but perhaps it's something else, or maybe they have a medical condition that's actually more acute, so it's better that they go into a more medical person like a GP or that kind of thing. So I say to some people that it's a bit like, you know, you wouldn't send your mechanic to, or your car to a mechanic who didn't really know the different parts of the car engine and how they interworked with each other, you know. But at the same time, like I say, you can teach a child or a parent to just work on that.
Yeah.
I did a course recently on craniosacral therapy and longevity, and the aim of the course was dealing with the older population and dealing a lot of the issues that they have and conditions that they develop are as a result of a build-up of the waste products of inflammation. The waste products of it is in an overly simplified way make things stickier. The joints get stiffer, the muscles don't glide over each other as easily, so that the brain, the soup in which the neurons of the brain connect and transmit is mushier or not so clear and clean. So again, by encouraging the fluid flow to be improved, you're rinsing those out and flushing them out and enhancing the connectivity and enhancing the health. So you know, all of that, it depends on where you're coming from, but there's huge scope within it.
Absolutely. And further on that scope, actually, you work a lot with animals as well, which we'll talk about in 4 minutes. And still here with Fiona McDevitt in studio, and I'm going to turn on your mic now as well, Fiona, in case I forget it.
Okay.
Yes, we were just chatting before the track there about how you work. You come to work with animals as well, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Excellent stuff. And you've a little punch for working with horses, is that right?
I do. I have a grow for them, all right.
Very good. And where did that come from?
Well, my granny had a few ponies when I was growing up, and I was lucky enough to be able to go down and stay with her regularly on school holidays, and I just loved it.
Yeah. Where was that?
That was near Tullamore, just outside Tullamore. Yeah.
Good horse country.
Indeed, yes, yeah. And I just loved them, found them fascinating. And between her and her cousin, they taught me very well how to be safe around them, how to treat them, how to look after them, and obviously to ride them and so on. And it was a great grounding in it. And to be fair, for their generation, they what I now know, they had an awful lot of it well figured out, in the how horses think and behave and why and so on like that. And I can say that, touch wood, so far I've never been kicked by a horse while on the ground. So which is not, I've fallen off them many times though, but that's all part of the learning. And they're wonderful creatures to work with. I do the equine craniosacral therapy on them. And they're generally very open to it. But we must remember, and it comes back to the parasympathetic, but we are predators to them and they're prey. Their natural state of being is to be alert. They can be very relaxed, but they have heightened alertness to all that's going around them, between in different fields that we can't even see. They'll hear in a greater range than we can. They see further, and their eyes are on either side of their head. So there are things we have to remember, that if you approach them from their left side, they process that with the right side of the brain. But if you then go around the other side, and they then have to process you all over again on the other side of the brain, because the eyes don't overlap much except straight ahead. They see almost 360 degrees, almost. So there's little things like that to take into account, but they're very open to it, and they're very clear if they've had enough. Your hands won't be able to sort of meld into the fascia and so on. And they're,
because we were just chatting briefly before you came on, and you were saying that, you know, when a client comes in for a session of, you know, whatever description, you know, be it, you know, visiting a GP all the way to counselling, psychotherapy, or whatever the case may be, like that, you know, we've learned how to kind of try and fool the therapist in some way, shape, or form, you know, but like that. Horses and animals don't have that, you were saying.
Yeah, a horse basically has a brain probably equivalent to about a 3-year-old child. So they're very authentic, in a sense. Excuse me. they will just be themselves. They don't have the ability or the skill or the need possibly to pretend to be something that they're not.
Yes.
And like in as a human, you could be, for instance, walking around a strange city and feeling very vulnerable, and so your shoulders are hunched down, your big wide eyes, and you're looking around all the time, looking at the map, and it's very obvious that you're a vulnerable tourist and you don't know where you're going. So that's can
big
make
carry
you
carry jersey on you going around.
Yeah, exactly. In Cork, very dangerous. So therefore, sometimes we will assume a posture and of being tall and shoulders back and confident, even though it's not what we're feeling inside. So we can have a mismatch between the outside and the inside.
Yes,
in a sense. Horses are always matched inside and outside.
Ah, well.
And interestingly, they can also sense in us whether our inside matches our outside as we approach them. And if it is matching, then it's more coherent.
I love that,
more
actually,
at ease. Yeah. Where if it's a mismatch for some reason, then they're a bit more, they're less at ease, really, because they're not sure, well, which one are you? You know, in a sense. So it's important for the therapist, again, to be grounded and neutral and in...
I know, I noticed, like, from the practitioners that I know who work with animals and yourself as well, like, you've got grounded energy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of solid people, like, you know, it's not that therapists who aren't necessarily very grounded aren't doing good work, but I guess... You know, that's kind of why you're good at that, is because, you know, an animal will sense if someone is, you know, not in that space, like, you know, to be treated by them, you know.
It allows, you've a better foundation. It's like that old thing of imagining tree roots going from your feet down, or in the Tai Chi, which I think you were interviewing somebody about Tai Chi last week. That
huge fan of it.
You're more solid
on
the ground. So you're coming from a stronger foundation, and there's a better conduit, because there's energy flows anyway. Everything is energy, because everything goes down to electrons and neutrons whirring around. So in some ways, sense, there's a vibration there anyway. So they sense that, and it helps things to flow better. If you're not as grounded, then perhaps things aren't able to flow, and then... So that's the way I would understand it anyway.
Excellent. Yeah. And are you busy with the horses?
It comes and goes. It's very interesting to treat them, because they you can treat things that the regular conventional type of, say, horse physiotherapy can't treat, like a lot of head issues or head shyness or some change in behaviour that people are a lameness that doesn't seem to, they can't get to the root of, and that type of thing.
You know, I would assume, this is a sweeping assumption, all right, that someone, you know, a craniosacral therapist won't be the first person someone's going to call if their horse is a little bit out of whack, right?
No, not usually.
Is it fair to say that they might have tried a few other things before?
Generally,
giving Fiona a call,
Yes, yes, that's true. And again, part of it is not the awareness. It's not that well known out there, particularly in the horse world. And part of it is too that a lot of people, if they themselves are into more conventional medicine, they may not be as aware of all the options out there.
Okay.
Yeah, so for sure,
Great stuff. We've got to wrap it up. But before you go, Fiona, it's been fantastic having you in.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
It's not that I didn't expect it to be great or anything like that, but it was just like I think we had a good banter between us, and
absolutely,
you know, we kind of sing from a similar hymn sheet, I think, you know, so that was very helpful. So if people want to contact Fiona. Were you saying you had an idea for students or something like that?
Well, just as this is a college, university college radio station, if anybody is looking for a research project, we have loads of ideas. So we'll be delighted. It doesn't matter if it's physics, chemistry, psychology, medicine, anything else at all. We'd be delighted. We've lots of ideas. So please come to us.
Excellent. And people can get Fiona on 087-222-6878. And I can vouch for Fiona. I've had sessions with her. And if you're a little bit stressed coming up with exams or studies, or maybe you're doing a course that you don't want to be doing in the first place, give Fiona a call. She'll help you with that. And Fiona, you can get Fiona at fiona@posturematters.ie. And the website is... what is that?
The website is my initials. It's FMCD.
Oh, sorry, FMCD. FMCDphysiotherapy.com.
That's it.
Okay, look. Fiona, thanks very much. It's been fantastic having you in. And
thank you very much for having me.
Not at all. Anytime. It would be great to have you in another time. I'd be delighted to have you in.
Be delighted.